Pickaxe.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing as directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Triforce podcast.
Hello. Welcome.
Hello.
With Piru and Flax.
Hello.
And how Sips. Pip.
And Lewis.
Hello.
Man, how are you guys doing this morning? It's a very fine morning.
Oh.
I was up early this morning.
I'm bad. I'm doing pretty bad.
Why? What happened?
Oh, no.
Just, I went to the bathroom before we started, thinking, you know, it was going to be a quick in and out, and it wasn't.
You found a lump.
Oh, dude,
no,
yeah.
It's not as bad as that. It was just a bit of a... Just a bit of a messy shit, Lewis. Jeez. God.
Really? Do we really have to start with this?
Well, I was intrigued because Sip said on Discord, he's just going for a poop, BRB 5 minutes. And I took a poop at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Because I find that now I'm getting older, I can time my poops like down to the minute. I'm like, right, I've had my coffee,
yeah,
had a smoke, and the nicotine and the caffeine together combine to force my body's like, it's pooping time. It's like we're on a clock.
Yeah.
So I'm now thinking if Mrs. F is like, let's go somewhere today, give it half an hour, love, and then we'll go out. Just got to wait.
Right.
Because I don't want to poop when I'm out. So once that's done, I'm good to go. But I've got to get my business done first. So I do think it's funny we're on the same clock.
I tell you what, I used to poop before I had to. I used to feel the urge and need to poop before I did something exciting.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's like, a good time to do it. You don't want to be bungee jumping and then just like pinching a loaf at the same time.
Exactly. So, but I still really get that before going up on stage to do stuff. So we went to Insomnia weeks so back and did a stage show. And before that stage show, man, needed to go so bad.
Yeah.
And then once you're out there on the stage, never had a problem at all, like the whole time.
Didn't
it's not like I was like holding in a massive poop like the whole time.
See, I'm the opposite. I get up on stage doing a panel, I'm just like, oh, excuse me, everybody, I'll be back in like 10 minutes. I just I didn't realize this was going to happen, but wow.
You don't see that tend to happen too much, do you, on like live television? You know, people don't have to rush off to do a poop.
Well, I
on
think
live
it's
TV.
Like in porn as well. There's just lots of enemas.
Right.
Happening.
Oh, I see.
And like lot they clear themselves out big time.
So you think the news readers and all these people who do live stuff are constantly like
constantly
washing themselves
just
out,
like getting a hose up there and just flushing out their system. Like,
right. So to make sure.
Just to make sure, because you
BBC
never know.
BBC News doesn't get interrupted.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, they're professionals. That's what you have to do if you're a professional.
Yeah.
Welcome to show business, kid. Here's your enema.
Gee, I didn't know it was going to be like this, mister.
That's pretty much how it works. I mean, on the porn side of things, for sure, yeah. It's like
I've never done it with... I've never been a real professional journalist or professional actor or anything. It's funny.
Oh, you're professional, Lewis. You're one of the most professional people that I know.
Thanks.
Yeah. But you just got to bring your poop game up to code.
That's it. You just got to flush out your system and you're ready to rock and roll. Imagine a world where you're about to go on stage at a stage show and you don't need to poop because your system has already been flushed out 3 days prior and there's no chance of you pooping again for like a week.
Beautiful.
It's a dream. Yeah. It's my dream.
It's a world we can have. We just have to make sure that we get there together.
I'm not sure we deserve it, though. That's the thing.
What, a world with planned poop?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, I think that's like our curse. Like, that's like more evidence that this earth of ours is actually hell and we don't realize it. Yeah.
We're doomed.
Yeah. I wonder if we can fill this entire podcast just chatting about poop.
I hope
because
not.
We haven't really got anything else to talk about. It feels like like no time has gone by.
Yeah, me and Lewis are in the vacuum of World of Warcraft right now.
Yeah,
we've been playing it heavy for like a week and a bit now.
That's all we've been doing.
So we have like nothing new to talk about.
No,
like we had to like force ourselves to play Hearts of Iron 4 yesterday. Pretty much,
we were just fun, like. Though.
No, I'm just joking. We didn't have to force
it. It was fantastic.
It was really good. Yeah. That game is crazy, by the way. Holy shit, it's so weird.
It is super weird.
I wish I had more manpower, and I wish I had more units so that I could do more. Like, because all I'm doing is doing air everywhere.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the problem is, I think now we've played enough that we could try and do a game where one of us is Germany, one of us is Japan, and one of us is another, like Italy, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
And see if we can conquer it as the Axis. I think it would be good, because there is a bit to manage, but I think we all know the game.
Yeah.
So I was watching, I saw on the Hearts of Iron 4 subreddit, someone completed a complete world conquest as Liberia.
Wow.
So they took over every single island, they took over every single
man, that must have been really satisfying to do.
As Liberia.
Like, imagine just knowing the game so well that you can do that. That would be fun. I would enjoy doing that.
It's mad.
I would definitely tinker away at that for a couple of weeks. It'd be great.
I mean, his strategy, okay, if you're interested, he started off as Liberia, and he basically just joined the Axis and then sort of declared war on the Netherlands very early.
Right.
Apparently, it's pretty lightly defended, and just took over the Netherlands as Liberia completely. Just, you know, like ambushed them, and then moved in on the UK, took that, and then from there, world was his oyster.
I suppose once you take over the UK, you're like pretty good to go.
Yeah. With Hearts of Iron 4, I mean, it's an early edition of it, really. I mean, I know that it was in development for a long time, and they were struggling with quite a lot of it for sort of quite a while. And I think one of the biggest problems it's got at the moment with the AI is the national focuses. Because I think that a lot of the time the AI is involved in something, it's really, really difficult for the AI to win a war or to secure an objective. And the national focus comes along and says something to the Nazis like, invade Scandinavia. And they go, okay, that's what we're doing now. And they abandon the plans that they've got to go off and do that. And we saw that where they were at war with the French, and they always attack the Maginot Line for some reason. Because I think the AI thinks, oh, I'd have to spend time. You know, I mean, there needs to be a national focus that says, we're going to go through Belgium. Like, that needs to be a national focus to go through the Netherlands and Belgium, rather than throw thousands of men at the Maginot Line to die.
I think it is one of them. The AI is just not very good. This is a long-running problem. Like, you know, the best coders of AI in the world have to be people who are making video games, right? Yeah. And in fact, AI programming and AI education and stuff like this has been driven by video games often because it's very, very difficult if you imagine how to... Because often computers are given these things where it's said, like, you know, if this happens, do this and then do this, you know.
But that's,
imagine, like, right, it's like... But then again, Hearts of Iron 4, much like Civ, are very complicated games, and the AI doesn't do them very well unless it gets to cheat.
Well, AI is never very fluid in games, though. The AI is only as good as what whoever's coding it can think up of that's going to happen and how it can respond to it, sort of thing. You know what
I
mean?
But I think there's a reason for that. And I've actually been doing, I don't know if I mentioned this, I've been doing some stuff with York University, right? And about 3 months ago, I went up there for a visit to York University, and they're doing this thing about statistics in esports. They're working towards a project on that. And they want to use machine learning to do it. So they've got this really cool thing where they've got all this machine learning stuff and this neural net and everything like that. And it can go over, it's working with Dota and CSGO at the moment and a few other games. And because of the way that Valve coded the API for their games, you can pull all this statistical data out of the game using things like, I don't know what programs they have, but you can have millions and millions and millions of games, and you could present, for instance, the average location of a hero across 10 million games.
Wow.
So you can compare your positioning with what the average is, and then you can scale that. So, well, what's the average positioning at 5K MMR, 6K MMR, and sort of see what differences there are between bad players and good players. Now, most of the AI that happens for games, it's self-contained. It has no way of learning. It has no way, like, you can figure out what the AI is going to do and sort of play it. You know what I mean? You can sort of play the the AI, because you think, well, it always does this in this situation, so I know that if I do this, this, and this, I'm in position.
Yeah, and that's because it'll have been coded to respond to like a situation in X number of ways.
Right, and it's it doesn't learn. It doesn't learn. And what it needs to do is learn. And what needs to happen is that the developers of the game, I think this will happen eventually, will say, the game's going to start off fairly simply, and the AI is going to be as good as we can make it, but it is going to learn over all of your games, and it's going to figure out ways to beat people in certain situations and what's the best. I mean, it'll find the best balance of forces because it's got millions of games to compare it to. So it can say that on average in this situation, the best thing to do is this or that. So I think that that's the next evolution of AI, is that to use the data from all those people playing the game to improve it for everybody. That's the next step, I think.
Yeah, I mean, in some examples, though, like the AI in Hearthstone, for example, I think sometimes it's coded, not badly, but it's coded in a certain way that from the outside, like from you as the player perceiving it, it's like, this AI coding is terrible. Like, what were they thinking? But I think sometimes they do it for like comedy effect, or, you know, they do it very specifically in that way so that you can get through it, or that you yourself learn something by them making like a bad mistake, which is kind of clever in itself, actually. Like, I think people just dismiss it straight away as like, oh, this was too easy. You know, this AI is dumb.
We're talking about the Karazhan one night.
But I think in some specific cases, it's done on purpose for you to learn something, or for,
maybe,
you know, just for like some sort of like story or comedy effect. And I think, you know, that's a totally different situation, you know, that AI never does need to learn, sort of thing. But certainly in something like Hearts of Iron or like Stellaris or something, the AI would totally benefit from being able to learn and adapt and do different things. But like, what if it went like too far and became like really, 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 really good?
Well, that,
and you
that's
could never beat
planning
it,
a war.
And then Skynet, and then we're dead.
And then so. It actually does it, yeah. I mean, that's where the difficulty level would be, that you would set the difficulty level, and that would limit it to a certain depth of search, if you like. Because if you give a machine long enough, it'll run through enough permutations that it'll arrive at an optimal sort of strategy. So what you want to say is limit the depth of its search, and also maybe it has to choose from a few within a range. Whereas if you want to play on lethal difficulty, it always chooses the absolute optimal strategy. Yeah, yeah. That would be amazing.
Imagine a world where the military just got so lazy that they depended on, you know, like game AI to you know, manage and
plan. I don't think
their
it's
wars.
That hard to imagine, dude. It's crazy easy.
That'd be pretty good.
Let the computer do this.
Can we phone up Paradox? We're gonna need the Clausewitz engine to plan out this one.
Deploy Clausewitz, Mr. President. Your Clausewitz launch codes, please.
Oh shit! That'd be so good.
Boot up Hearts of Iron 5. There's a war.
Let's run a simulation. Now, the simulation says it's 1945, but let's for argument's sake, say it's 2020 and we're, you know, nukes actually matter. And
they don't just take out train tracks anymore, Mr. President.
Oh, my God.
So, sorry, spoilers. So, basically, like, this is a really interesting thing because Elon Musk believes that we're living in a computer simulation. You know this, right?
Simulation theory is a big thing. I've been reading about it. It's an interesting one, but it's kind of a philosophical thing. Yeah. Really.
The other thing Elon Musk said, though, is that, and a lot of people have said this, there was a book called Superintelligence by this philosopher, and he talked a lot, and it became very popular, and it was basically talking about how if machine brains surpass human brains, the super brains will replace humans. Basically, it's the doom scenario that, you know, the post-human society will not, well, obviously a post-human society won't involve humans, but AIs are the biggest danger, more dangerous than nuclear weapons. That's what Elon Musk actually said. So, because we were playing Divinity, right, the pre-alpha, and one of the things that was talked about there I found really interesting was that they were talking about how they coded the AI to make it harder. And the way they coded the AI to make it harder was not to do with self-learning or anything like that. It was that they watched a load of humans playing Divinity on YouTube and then found out what they did and then deliberately coded the encounters to counter that stuff. Okay, so that is like garbage. Okay, that's a garbage level of intelligence. But the other thing is interesting is that when Deep Blue beat Garry Kasparov back in the day at chess. I think it was what it was called. Everyone thought, oh, chess is over. It's just going to be a computer game now. Computers can do it better. It's going to be boring. We'll watch computers play against computers. But what he did was, after he did that, he actually made a league. You can identify yourself as a human or a computer, and you can actually play anything. So you can actually get a computer and have a computer play with you, or you can be a team of people, like a university team.
I didn't realize
team.
That was the thing, because I actually identify as a computer. So right. For a league to accept me with open arms like that.
You can identify as whatever you want. I'll be whatever you want. Emotional. But the best chess players in the world right now are actually a combination of computers and people.
Cyborgs.
So it's not... Yeah. No.
You know what I find... You know, something that it's worth mentioning as well, like something I always find really depressing, like when I'm playing, you know, like Fallout, for example, and like, you know, this maybe could happen to us as well. You know, imagine AI becomes so strong, and imagine somehow we are wiped out by robots or something like that. And then, you know, thousands and thousands of years later on, because like the robots just don't know what to do. They just sort of meander around and do whatever it was that they were intended to do in the first place. And then some other distant civilization lands on planet Earth, which is still totally intact and everything, but it's just completely sort of run by these like boring ass weird robots with like, you know, Coca-Cola slogans that they're chanting out every once in a while and stuff. And like, what is another civilization going to think of us if that's what they see? You know what I mean? Like when you're playing Fallout and you see like a Nuka-Cola robot like walking around saying like, hey, bring your kids down to Nuka World and stuff like that. You're sort of like, oh, fuck that. Like, the old world is, like, funny and charming in its own way. But, man, it's, like, kind of depressing as well, right? And that's the only insight they get into your civilization is these crappy, shitty robots that you've made that are now just, like, shuffling around on this beautiful Earth where there's, like, no humans left sort of thing.
Oh, man.
I don't want to be embarrassed like that thousands of years after my death.
I find that game depressing anyway. Like, there's just the whole thing. It's super depressing.
Yeah.
Everyone's there's so the thing sad.
There's a thing about futurism, though, right? And that's basically that trying to predict the future is very, very difficult, especially the near future. But the more distant future is actually not so difficult to predict in a sense because, you know, for example, I think the analogy, I can't remember who said this, but the analogy is that when it rains on a mountain, you can't predict where that rain is going to go, but you can predict that it's going to go down. You can predict that it's going to run down into a river and that river's going to go into the sea. You can't predict where, how, you know, it's very it's very difficult to predict all the little raindrops, but it's very easy to know where the big direction is. And the reality of what that means is, though, that if this alien race came along and saw this happening on Earth, it would be familiar to them from their own experiences their own past. You know, it's an experience that the way that civilizations evolve is not unlikely to be similar. They are going to develop nuclear weapons at some point, and maybe they will Armageddon themselves. Maybe they'll move past that to another point where they've developed another thing, and then maybe they'll Armageddon themselves, and they'll develop past that point to another thing, and then maybe they'll Armageddon themselves to the point where they get to go and explore our planet, and they'll think, okay, these guys only reached this stage.
And they think, we never Armageddoned anything. Let's try it on these guys.
You never know, though. I mean, that's we're basing that based on human nature and, like, you know, the way that we are, the way that, like, at a very basic level, we operate. And, like, humans have always had some sort of, you know, idea of, like, conflict and being stronger than somebody else and, like, the whole sort of... you know, concept of like alpha male and this and that. And like, you know, what if an alien race just doesn't have any of that? Maybe they're just like all fun loving, you know, Buddhas or something. And they just, you know, they spend all their time like examining the feelings of like insects and stuff. And
I mean, if the Nazis had won, imagine that world that we'd have now. Imagine that.
You can. So there's a Netflix series about it.
Oh, really?
Based on a Philip K. Dick book called The Man in the High Castle.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, that sounds great. I'm going to watch it when I get home after I've played WoW Deus Ex and the new Fallout DLC.
There's a movie.
Got a lot to do. I'm busy, P-Flax. There's a movie.
He's stressing out about video games, P-Flax.
I know, it's depressing. There's a film in the Man in the High Castle, in that world, there's a film called The Grasshopper Lies Sleepy or something like that. I can't remember what it was called. And it's a film of World War II being lost by the Nazis. And they're not quite sure, like they're looking at historical footage of World War II being lost by the Nazis, despite living in a universe where the Nazis won. And that's the premise. It's very interesting.
The grasshopper lies heavy.
Heavy, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But it's a it's interesting. The book is very interesting. It's weird because America is split in half between the Japanese West Coast and the Nazi East Coast.
Oh, I remember hearing about this actually, yeah.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. It's okay. But the Japanese have a very different cultural approach to the fact that they've conquered America because they're obsessed with American culture and arcana. So they're like any kind of American pre-war relics they're really, really interested in. And they live this very strange sort of life where they're still into the... Have you heard of the I Ching?
Oh, yeah.
It's like a collection of... You sort of throw these sort of sticks that have things on them and you look them up in that order and the book will tell you what you should do in any given circumstance. So it's like a sort of a sort of portable
it's like multifunctional
horoscope. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they're still living by that kind of thing. It's interesting anyway. It's
worth sounds pretty good.
If you like alternate history.
I love alternate reality and alternate history stuff.
Yeah,
and
me
in fact
too,
I love
yeah.
historical fiction. I love reading kind of stories that because history can be very boring if you just read out the facts, but actually history is, I think, sometimes extremely cool and dramatic and exciting. And people are horrible to each other. I think this goes back to the whole AI thing and what Exerbia was talking about. And it's basically that if you create an AI that is aware and self-aware, its main overriding factor is not to die. People really do not want to die. And this thing, these AIs they created will really just... I think that's the major thing, like... The chances of you ever creating a benevolent AI that will be willing to die is zero. Everything that is alive fights so hard to carry on living.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's what it's
all
about.
I mean, have you heard about the basilisk?
No.
No.
This is supposed that there is some guy proposed. There's a forum. I can't remember what internet forum it is. I apologize. It's like people philosophize about the near future stuff and future technology and stuff.
It sounds like
I think
the somethingawful.com forums.
It
sounds like that, a lot of that kind of stuff happens there for sure. So.
Yeah, go check it out, listeners. This is a different forum, and someone was talking about this. The we live in a simulation, not by, you know, that sort of all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing is this: if there is a super advanced AI, perhaps their entire sort of outlook on humanity would be that they will retroactively punish you for not doing everything that you could in your power to assist in the creation of this AI. The AI will run a simulation of your life. And if at no point in that simulation do you assist in the creation of this AI, you are obviously not a benevolent person, given that the AI is benevolent and is looking out for people and we now have harmony and all the rest of it. So it will retroactively punish you and you'll spend a sort of a simulated eternity in hell, which I thought was really crazy, mind-melting idea. But a lot of people got very freaked out by it. But my problem with the whole we're living in a simulation thing is that I don't think it serves any purpose. And the idea that some superintelligence would have come up with an idea why we should all live in a simulation and manage it and all the rest of it, it doesn't really make sense. I don't quite understand why it would bother.
No. I don't think it's too relevant. I think another couple of interesting things about the future is that one of the ideas is that we will eventually be able to basically either live forever through kind of health and genetic modification to some extent. Plus, there's in a couple of hundred years when computers have advanced sufficiently, we'll be able to basically just download our consciousness or our brain into a computer and mimic it in a computer and live in this virtual world, like World of Warcraft, live there.
Right.
And and it'll become slowly this thing where no one has to die. Your grandma doesn't have to die.
They just preserve your brain in a jar and hook you up to World of Warcraft.
Nice.
No, they don't even preserve your brain. They just copy all the electrical impulses. They scan your brain and it gets put into a hard drive. And, you know, you can store people in hard drives. So death will become this taboo.
I mean, honestly, I know that I know people are saying like, oh, you know, we desperately don't want to die, but actually when I'm 90, I'm ready. Like I will die. Like I'm good with that. I'm cool. Like just, you know,
just live in World of Warcraft.
Not even just
can
like,
you
just
imagine...
fucking pull the plug. I'm done. I'm, you know, I'm, 90 years is enough for me. Like, I don't need to live like much longer than that. I don't know if I'd want to. Like, you know, if I could live forever with like my 18-year-old body and stuff, cool. But like, I don't want to live forever with like a fucking
old, decrepit
geriatrics body
and or
in
and
a virtual world or anything. Like, I don't want to fucking.
You can always ask to be deleted.
Yeah, just delete.
Oh, come
me.
On, Sips. Imagine, you know, imagine, the thing is, it'll be like you are in this 18-year-old's body because the technology will be so advanced. It'll be like going to the holodeck, you know.
No,
imagine.
I think, you know, cremation, I think
well,
that's
listen,
why
Sips,
it exists.
Do you know what? You're this, not going to have to worry about this idea because it's not going to be in your lifetime.
I know,
so.
But this idea of like burning somebody's body, I think people do that on purpose because they're like, I'm done. Like, I don't want there to be any ifs, ands, or buts, nothing. You know, just fucking burn me and that's it. I'm done.
Right.
I don't want to accidentally, like, come back
as
and, you know, and be stuck in the morgue, like, alive somehow, like,
I would
overnight
love that.
Or something.
I want to have my brain frozen and I want to come back in, like, 1,000 years and they'll be like, welcome to the future. I'd fucking
I'm
love
done.
That. I want to see
quite
I'm
quite happy
just so
for
curious.
It to be somebody else's problem.
Oh, no, you can't do that. I think having your brain frozen is a real danger. I mean, we've got to understand that, you know, I had a really bad dream last night. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Really horrible, a really bad dream, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if I had my brain frozen at the moment of
having a nightmare.
You know, God. I mean, I would have, it would be horrible to have be living that nightmare out
but
for
you, you're
God
assuming
knows
that
how
your
long.
Brain is going to be active. The point is it's frozen.
Yeah.
It's not doing anything.
It's not doing
anything. There's no thought going on.
Yeah.
Your brain is essentially dead but preserved.
It's like in Aliens when they travel very far and they go into the cryo sleep chamber thing. You know, like there's nothing happening. Feels like
they've
been in there for a second.
They do dream there though, don't they? Maybe.
I feel like if all the electrical impulses in your brain are frozen and stopped anyway, aren't you dead anyway? I don't think you come back.
That's the point. And they
reanimate. I don't think you can, though. I think the electrical impulses that are happening right now are what are making you up. And as soon as that stops, you're dead. I don't think you can. I don't think you can
no,
react
I,
to
I think
electrical
that chamber's
impulses.
Got like a built-in defib. So like when they thaw you out, just like bzzz, and you're back. Just like gets
I love how
going
we're theorizing.
Again.
I think there's a lot. I think we can. All right, PFAX. I will concede that is a possible. I think there's some things in science which are impossible, right? So
that's silly.
For example, traveling faster than light is a very difficult concept.
It's very difficult, but I would never say it's impossible.
I think it's.
I don't think it's impossible. I think nowadays, I think we have the time and the luxury to sit around and think up all this crazy shit. But the reality is that none of it is going to happen in our lifetimes or our children's lifetimes or their children's lifetimes.
I disagree. Have you not heard about the EM drive that's just
Yeah, but that's
out.
Not going to go faster than light. There's a lot of rules of the universe. The only way to go faster than light is to go through some sort of wormhole or whatever. But that doing that is so crazy and out there.
I don't even think
you know,
it's
the fact is, though,
wormholes.
That you know, humans are not made to really go into space either. You know, we go up
no,
into space.
No, I don't really want to be in
we
space.
We go up into a plane and we get bombarded by radiation. Yeah.
We'll be fine.
Up in
They'll
space.
Figure it out. It would be silly to say otherwise. I think there are two issues.
Yeah.
Number one is, will we destroy ourselves before then? Which is the biggest concern, and it is a real possibility. And number two is time dilation, I think, is the biggest issue we're going to have about faster than light travel. Because what's the fucking point in setting off on a 6-month mission where you're traveling faster than light and you get to some other system, and behind you, the world has aged 200 or 300 years. What's the point? It destroys...
What do you mean, what's the point?
I mean, by the time you get there, everything
the
and everybody you
be
left
gone.
Behind is gone. They might have even come... There are many sci-fi stories about this, where a ship sets off on this voyage, but when it gets there, it finds that the system it's arrived at is already developed and colonized because they were overtaken.
Yeah.
The people of Earth, 300 years in the future... have managed to come up with warp gates or something and got there and they were like, yeah, sorry we didn't tell you guys on your 5-year mission to this star.
We had no way of stopping this ship once it started getting going, so we just left you.
Yeah. I think that's the issue is we're not mentally ready for dealing with it.
I think the difficulty, though, for me is that I know a lot about science, but not too much. I'm not like a fucking... doctor, or none of us are, right? If you actually want to read anything about science or any of this stuff, go ahead and do it, right? We're not the experts. But I think that when I was a kid, magic was so special because I didn't really understand the rules of the universe, right? Whereas now I have a better idea of futurism and what is potentially to come in our
future, in humanity's future. And therefore, I find it very, very difficult to watch some sci-fi or some shows in the same way that I don't get that kind of joy about mystery necessarily anymore, because some of it's just so, you know, I see things happening and I'm like, wow, this is so kind of bollocks. You know, I don't like it. I don't know. I like the hard. I've always read. I started off reading sort of hard sci-fi. It's so called,
right?
Because it's more.
Stuff. You just got right into the hard
Asimov,
stuff.
Asimov, and stuff like that. Arthur C. Clarke,
and it's surprising how Arthur C. Clarke and Asimov actually does hold up today. Like, you know, even though it was written about 50 years ago, it feels like you're still reading some really good science-based sci-fi.
I think,
you know,
they're like, it's quite philosophical, a lot of their stuff. Like Asimov's the rules for robots and stuff. That's actual philosophy. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you can look at that and say, this isn't just the, and then the robot pulled out his cannon arm and fired at Bodega. But Bodega, using his cyborg legs, dived to the left, anticipating the robot's cannon arm, and shot back at him with his las pistol. it's good sci-fi, you know. It's actual...
Please carry on. I'm fucking really enjoying
reading
this.
From his homebrew fan fiction.
What happened next to Bodega, Perry? Bodega.
Tell me more about this, Bodega. He sounds great. Does he have a cape?
No, he doesn't.
I hope so.
Bodega shuns capes. He wears a jetpack.
Rightly so.
And Bodega fired his jetpack and shut down the caped fool who was wearing a cape. What? Yeah, but there'll be another one in a second.
I love how we have a little
Danny's
girl who's
trying
part of this
to
podcast.
Get his sci-fi on. Jeez.
She's interested in Bodega.
Yeah, she
Tell
wants
me more.
To find out about the cape and the jetpack. Jeez.
Oh, my God. Oh, I love it.
She's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So what else have you guys been doing this week? Anything fun happen?
I started playing the Nuka World DLC for Fallout 4.
Cool.
And it's cool, man. It's pretty fun. It's like, you can tell that the guys who made it have been to Disneyland lots of times, because there's all of the sort of the tropes of, you know, like a theme park or like a major sort of child-friendly, family-friendly theme park in there. But it's got the usual sort of Fallout stuff in it as well, which has been really cool so far. Like I've barely done any of it, and so far it's just been great. It's just been really fun. Like the whole sort of idea of Nuka World, the storyline that's like behind it, the factions and stuff is really well done. It's really, really good. It's worth getting for sure.
It's the last DLC, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's the last for the season pass. So I don't know what the plans are for future DLC, or if that's it now. That, like, you know, because I guess the idea for the season pass is that you buy it ahead of time and it gives you all of the DLC at a discounted price.
Yeah, I
but
heard it, that
it's the roadmap of DLC, but I haven't heard that there's anything
there
else
were
in development.
Hints that it was going to come along, and it said, you know, because I think Pete Hines said that we're going to do more than we planned.
Right.
They've mentioned that they might think about doing another one, but there's no.
Yeah,
there's no necessarily
Fallout 4, I feel like the DLC and the frequency that's come out in has enhanced the game a lot and made it a lot more fun to play. You know, that definitely it's introduced a lot of like interesting, cool things that you can do and you can spend time doing. And it, I think it's just really well done. Like when I first started playing Fallout 4, I liked it because I really like the Fallout setting. I, you know, I'm generally a fan of Fallout games and stuff. But for some reason, I played for about 50 hours and I got really bogged down in the settlement stuff. And then I was just like, oh, you know, I think like I've played enough. I don't really want to play anymore. But coming back to it now, I'm starting to realize more and more that it is a really good game. Like it, and you know, a lot of people dismissed it straight away, saying that it wasn't very good. But I personally think like it's starting to become
overall,
almost as
like,
memorable as New Vegas for me, which is hard to top.
Actually, I think it's just matched the New Vegas Metacritic score, because I think previously it was lower.
Yeah.
But the user score certainly has been lower than the. Metacritic has been lower than the reviewer, whatever it's professional review site score. I don't know why that is.
Well, I think we just we live in this culture now where we're not willing to spend time or money trying things when other people have done it already. Like I think sometimes we put too much stock into what people are saying and reviewing and stuff. You know, like I read reviews. I listen to people who criticize games and review games. And, you know, sometimes I agree with them or whatever. But you really, like, everybody's tastes are so different. You really have to just, you know, if something appeals to you and you want to play it and you want to try it, you should just go for it. Because you might be surprised, you know, like Fallout 4, if you read any reviews, like, you know, you'd stay away from it. But I'd say if you stay away from it, you're missing out on some potentially really good moments, like in gaming. Like, there's definitely some good stuff in there. And it's just such a rich sort of, like, the map is, I guess, smaller than people are used to, but man, there's so much in there. It's crazy. Like, it's just really good. If you really like the setting and the universe and stuff, it's really good. I like it.
Yeah. Well, good top-notch review. I definitely want to play it again once a load of mods. You know, I tend to come back to these games once they're gold.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there'll be a, whatever it is, a gold edition where you get fucking everything. I mean, I've already got the season pass, but it's kind of, it's a nice, often a nice patch when the gold comes out that kind of cleans everything up a bit.
If you got the season pass and you got all the DLC, there's enough there to do. Like, Far Harbor itself is huge. Like, it's a big story-driven DLC.
A bunch of mods. Like, I always enjoy an alternate start mod where you can start in a little shack and pretend to be someone else.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
You know, I like a couple of mods that just add more mobs out in the landscape or weird stuff like that.
I got the season pass.
Did you?
Yeah.
I have the season pass. Yeah. I don't even have the game installed. I only played 21 hours and it was okay. I enjoyed it. But at the time, I couldn't stream it. So I kind of stopped playing it.
Yeah.
On my old machine, I just couldn't stream it, so I didn't play it. And
oh, right.
I just kind of, I mean, I did enjoy it. I just, like I said, I do find it very depressing.
Yeah.
So I just kind of don't enjoy it so much. I've been fielding questions this week, or should I say corrections, because I dared to say that Gandalf didn't change his outfit during Lord of the Rings. And of course, as we all know, Pirion, after defeating the Balrog, he became Gandalf the White, and he got a new staff, and he got a new cloak. All right, whatever, nerd.
I mean, it's only like, you know, it was gray before. He might have just accidentally left it out in the sun or something.
Yeah,
and
maybe he just whittled it. You know, you never know.
Yeah, yeah.
And B, he did that once in the whole epic saga.
Yeah.
He didn't do it every time he killed a bear and found and got, you know, it's not like every time they're out in the wild, Gandalf's like, boar, and just kills it, runs over, rummages around in its claws and its fur and finds a good shield. You know, he killed a Balrog.
What do you think Gandalf does, like, at night when he goes home? You know, he's like, all right, hobbits, well, you know, it's been a great day, but
he smokes
a lot of weed.
That's
like,
what they,
you know,
that's what they do.
He just smokes. Do you think he, like, washes his cloak ever? Or, like, do you think he takes it off and hangs it up and he's just, like, stark naked underneath and just walks around his house, like, no clothes on?
Is this the kind of stuff you think about, Sibs?
Well,
I wonder when Gandalf gets naked.
Yeah,
I wonder. What does he look like under that cloak?
God, I wonder what his tongue feels like in my mouth. No. No, but, like, you know what I mean? Like,
kiss
it's
me,
funny.
Master Frodo. Kiss me now. No, oh, Master Gandalf, I don't know about this. Kiss me, Frodo.
You know, like, the thing is, when you're watching Lord of the Rings and the hobbits are presented to you and you can see their houses and stuff, you have, like, a fairly good idea of what their life is like, right?
They're like the Teletubbies.
Yeah, you can imagine that at night they've got the fire going, they're probably making a roast or whatever.
Yeah.
Probably talking about some dumb shit and smoking weed and stuff. And, you know, drinking a bit. And then you can see their little beds and they probably go to sleep in their little beds. And they've always got, like, some pants hanging from a line, like, inside their house and everything. But, like, you never get that insight into Gandalf. Like, what does he do? He's just like, you know, does he just have one of those depressing, like, one room apartments where, like, the only light is the TV and it's an infomercial and he's just, like, drinking a bottle of whiskey.
Shout at the TV.
Yeah, you know, he's got, like, pieces of microwave dinner stuck in his beard. Or whatever, like, who knows? You know, you never get that insight.
We can imagine the hobbits taking a shit, but we can't imagine Gandalf doing it. Like,
you cannot imagine that guy. Even you can't even imagine him pissing in a lake.
I can imagine Ian McKellen doing it.
You can imagine a hobbit, like, just, you know, ripping into a lake.
What
no problem.
Are you talking about? I could definitely imagine Gandalf taking a shit with that smiley face with the epic saxophone music playing.
Hell no. He's not going to be shitting. Like, that's the thing. He just magics the shit away. He gives himself a magic enema.
In like a hobbit's outhouse. You know, he like bangs his head on the door on the way out.
He's in the hobbit's house, right?
Oh, I see. Yeah,
what we're saying exactly. Is we have no locale in which
there's
we can
no context.
Place Gandalf.
Yeah, we can't.
Where's Gandalf's house?
He doesn't have one. He's got a wagon.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing. He's got a wagon.
Well, what do you mean if he's immortal? Surely he's had time to build a house.
Why? He doesn't need a house.
He would
What's
need
the point?
One for sure. Even somebody who's immortal needs a place to just like Look, put their feet up.
You build a house, you're immortal. In 10 years time or 1,000 years time, property prices have gone loco, or the, you know, bad neighbors moved in, orcs moved in down the road. Saruman's built some, you know, knocked down all the trees. You're like, oh, I wish I'd never built this house. It took me 100 years to build.
Yeah.
What a waste of time. I should have lived in the wagon.
He is a Maiar. That's his name. He's lesser Ainur, who are less powerful than the Valar, but still pretty powerful. God. There you go. That's Lord of the Rings for you. I know. No wonder they didn't put any of that in the fucking films.
Anytime there's a cool story, the lore behind the story is always the worst thing.
Oh, it's so dull.
That's bad.
Yeah, I mean, God, it's tough to. It's like that thing I said about history before.
Yeah.
If you just do all the facts, it's boring. But if you can tell a story around it,
people love to suck the mystery out of something, because if they're interested in something, there's a breed of people that want to know every detail of it and understand it completely, rather than accept.
That's right.
Gandalf's cool. He's a cool guy. He's a wizard who comes and goes. What more do you need to know?
Yeah, that's right. People would love to open the mystery box. It's like old fucking J.J. Abrams and the Lost Mystery Box. TED Talk. Do you remember the TED Talk where he talked about the mystery box?
No, I can only remember one specific TED Talk.
Yeah.
Dummy two times. Giving us TED Talk.
The only TED Talk I've ever heard is the Great Fucking Journey one that you went on. That's it.
My magical journey.
I think
I've spoken about this before. But yeah, he basically had a box with a question mark on it.
Right.
Like a mystery box. Like a lucky block. They sell them at all these fucking conventions.
Like a Super Mario box. That's
trademark,
by the way.
People love to buy something which they don't know what's in there, or open something they don't know what's in there. And it could be anything, right? It could be a head out of seven. You know, it could be like a fucking Gandalf's shit in there. He shat in a box. It could be literally.
That's all the rage now. Like that's how toys work now. Remember when we were kids, you went to the, you know, like we had packs of cards and stickers. Remember sticker books?
Yes.
You'd buy a pack of stickers and you'd get like 10 stickers and you'd often get doubles and occasionally get like a hologram or whatever. But now they've sort of moved on past that. They still do those, by the way. But now they do that with toys. So collectible toys. And they do them in series as well, which is even more of a money spinner. So like, for
You're
instance.
So fucking right. Duncan buys all of these Dota 2 like collectible toys.
Yeah. And
in
you
the
don't
boxes.
Know which one you're getting. You buy the box and you open it and you're like, oh, sweet. I got a golden fucking penis muncher or whatever is the hero's name is. And you know,
that's a couple of patches time.
That's Queen of Pain you're thinking of there.
Sorry, yeah. So, but like with kids' toys, it's the same now. You can get these little Lego figurines, like Disney Lego figurines. It's like series one, try to collect Pluto and Mickey and Donald and whatever. And you buy like five of them and you get like three Donalds. And like, if you're lucky, maybe you get Mickey Mouse or whatever. You know what I mean? And it's like, so in the end, of course, you end up spending like way more than you would have just getting a collector's box.
They put this into everything, right? And so I think the idea is that you trade with other people. But then again, it's really annoying to me to not have all of them. You know, it's annoying to me to not have all of them.
I know.
Because
you're going
to
do an achievement rant now, aren't you? For World of
Warcraft. It's weird, like how life. Anyway, this before we get into that weird thing around unboxing.
Not fair, right,
Lewis? This is maybe why the unboxing videos on YouTube are so popular too, right? Because and why anything that you buy comes in this. You know, it's quite exciting to unbox like a phone or whatever. You know,
is it?
Well, I
it's
don't know.
Not. It's really
or a thing like a collect's edition. You know,
is
it's
it?
Like, oh, it's a box with stuff in. Still, it
really
is. PFLAX.
Do you know
really
what?
Is.
Even I'm not that excited opening it, and I buy them. I'm just like, yeah, okay, well, fuck here. I just got a bunch of junk that's going to sit around, and I'm not really going to look at now.
Oh, shut up! When that box arrives, you're like, oh, what's in this box? Every single time.
When I was 12 years old, yeah. Now that I'm 36, no.
Come on, Dad.
Lighten the fuck up.
Look, we have both witnessed the ultimate unboxing, which is a child being born, Lewis.
Wow.
Once it. You've seen that unboxing, go.
That changes you.
I don't care what collector's edition of this, that, or the other you care
it's
to mention.
It's not going
to
be a child, it so a it's shit.
Boom.
I don't care about that art book and that soundtrack CD.
Yeah.
I don't even have a fucking CD player.
You're right.
Fuck.
Yeah, Lewis, you don't give a shit about that stuff.
I don't
though.
Want this cheap mouse,
I know for
mouse,
sure
Matt.
That you don't. Because you're just going to go
penis
home
muncher
and,
on it.
And do the same
yes,
shit.
You
you're
do.
Not going to read that art book. You're not going to listen to that CD soundtrack. So what's the point?
I'm never going to read that art book. I'll flick through it and be like, oh, this is a nice art book. But that's what Duncan's like when he opens these Dota figurines. He shows me it. He's like, oh, this isn't. And I'm like, oh, that's a... It's not a terrible, you know,
yeah.
But you have to be positive, right? It's like, yeah, that's a nice thing. Put it on the shelf and leave it there.
I suppose you have to be after you've just spent that much money on something you don't even know what you're getting. Yeah, I would want to be positive as well.
But the idea with J.J. Abrams, to link back around to the whole thing, is that, you know, he bought this mystery box, he put it on his shelf, and he doesn't want to open it because it's full of disappointment.
Right.
But in its form of mysterious, and he doesn't know what's in it, it's actually quite exciting.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there could be anything in there. Use your imagination.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he tried to do with Lost, but that then, like, I think it ended up being this thing where everyone needed answers. Everyone was like, what's the answer? What's the answer? What's the answer? All the fucking time.
And then the answer was almost a pirate with an eye patch living in a hatch
Gandalf's
somewhere.
Shit in a box.
But then what so what was the end of Lost? Was it they were in Purgatory?
No, they were. They
like,
had been dead, sort of, the whole time. And
right. I feel like, yeah, if we shouldn't really necessarily.
Sort of, yeah,
I didn't. Do you know what? This isn't really a spoiler because I didn't. I watched all of Lost, and I'm still not sure.
I think they were just. They were dead, and they were helping each other get to
heaven,
a settled afterlife.
Right.
Not necessarily heaven, but they all had problems, and if you like, sort of loose ends, and they all needed everything to be neatly.
But
tied
what about
together.
The people that died, though, like Mr. Echo and like Walt and Michael? They left.
He was there. He's fine. He's cool. Yeah. He made it. No problem.
Well, Echo made it back after getting killed by the
shadow. Yeah, they were all dead, weren't they? The thing with Lost is I read a really good article, and it was just like 100 questions that people had for Lost, and pretty much every answer was because the island is magical. And if you accept that and just say it's just a magic place. I mean, here's the thing with Lost. I really enjoyed watching it. The ending was a bit of a letdown, but I loved every episode, especially the episode. My favorite was when they had the underground bunker. I can't remember what it was called.
And it was wonderful.
It was great.
It was like everybody, that was what everyone was talking about at the time. It was the Game of Thrones of its day.
It was,
everyone came into work and they talked about the latest episode and they were like, what's in that bunker?
Yeah.
What's going
to
be under there?
They press the button and stuff and then the polar bear comic
and then they had
that
wonderful episode at the start of the series where what's his face who was in the bunker was doing his daily routine, going in the shower, cooking some eggs, listening to some music, dancing around, and then he hears this like suddenly rocking explosion, and that's when Locke and Jack drop the dynamite on that hole and are looking down into
and
it,
then when Locke leaves the thing to run too long and it goes meh, meh, and everything starts to go crazy.
I mean, that was
all
fucking
those weird
great
hieroglyphics. I was like, what's happening? That was the thing.
It was amazing TV.
But that's the same thing with people needing to know, is Gandalf a Valerian, Clolian, or a Alarian, Lelarian? Because they want to know details so that they can go on and on about how much they know about a thing without accepting mystery. Because we don't like uncertainty, do we?
I think it's partly that, but I think as well, Lost and Heroes. Remember Heroes started off pretty good? If you ever watched that, the first like season or two of Heroes was pretty good. And then it got pretty bad. Lost was the same. Like, the first couple of seasons were really good, and then it started getting really bad. And
now listen,
it's like symptomatic of network television in the US and the way that network television is run. So like ABC, CBS, and NBC and stuff like that. Anything that has like a primetime slot on like, terrestrial television that isn't like HBO or like a paid for thing or whatever. The first couple of seasons and like certainly like the pilots and stuff, the original team that writes the show are involved and they control the show, right? And then the show is really good at that point because the original team that wrote it know what they're doing, know how they want to take it forward and stuff. But then what happens is the networks start to get involved because of ratings. So they're like, Well, you know, this episode came out and the ratings are much lower than, you know, this episode, which aired 2 years ago or whatever. So can we get some of the magic from that episode 2 years ago into this? And then they have to start changing the writing and they have to start changing the formula.
Absolutely.
To prop up the ratings. And that's what kills the show every single time. Heroes and Lost are like prime examples of
that. There's a couple
of
things I've got to say about that. The prime example as well is that Star Trek Voyager keeps linking back to the Borg all the time because they knew that the Borg were a big deal. They did well early in the series and they keep having to have these fucking terrible Borg episodes much, much later into the thing. I mean, Seven of Nine, I think Star Trek's a little bit of an exception because both TNG, DS9 and Voyager all started off very poor. And the reason was because TNG originally had Gene Roddenberry writing it and he wasn't very good at that point. He wasn't very good anymore. And so when they got rid of him, it got a lot better. They always say about when Riker grew the beard and also the same thing with Sisko, like DS9, the first three series, really bad, and then it just picks up with the Dominion War, and it's almost like somebody to take the networks take a step back and just say, hey, go ahead, do what you want. And I think Voyager was bad in general, but DS9 really picked up and actually became one of the best Star Treks, and TNG was great.
Man, Deep Space Nine was one of like the best, not like best memories I have of being a kid in a good way. It was one of the clearest memories I have of being a kid, of being really hyped for something and then being massively disappointed in it when it came out.
A lot of DS9.
Man, we were so hyped for Deep Space Nine. We were like, oh shit, like this is going to be amazing. It's going to be in the same time slot as The Next Generation, which was still being aired at the time and stuff. And like, we were just like, oh God, it's going to be amazing. Like, I can't wait for it. And like, the first episode was like an hour long. And we were like falling asleep halfway through it and stuff. It was like terrible.
It was awful.
It was on at 6 p.m. in the UK. And so when I came in from school, it was always on Deep Space Nine at 6 p.m. And I used to watch it. And I really remember hating it. And I think it's because I'd watched these early seasons and these bad episodes, because they all have them. And I don't think the BBC... I think that you know, the US networks sell off the episodes, you know. Anyway, I think I just watched the first three seasons because I've been watching from season four onwards. And man, I mean, you're really enjoying it. So the other thing,
how
I want to say
about... How many seasons are out of it in total?
Like seven,
it's
I think.
It's done now, right? Like,
yeah,
like long,
oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Like 2005 it finished or something, right. A long time ago. But yeah, so anyway, the other thing I wanted to talk about was that there's a really good Orson Welles quote that says, if you want a happy ending, that depends on where you stop the story.
Right.
So in many ways, a lot of people don't accept the Lost was all a dream. Okay, and it's like headcanon. It's like, you deciding yourself. A lot of the times in a book, often you'll get an ending and then there'll be an epilogue or another story after it or a little bit on from that. And in many ways, for the reader, it's optional. You can actually pick in your head whether you want to say, do you know what? I just forget that last chapter. You know, I'm going to end my story back when this happy thing happened. Because you can always sort of think, in your head, you can always decide. You're welcome to choose what endings you want and what you take away from a story. And welcome to look at things a different way. Like before, when you said to me, Sips, like, oh, you know, imagine Jar Jar Binks was a Sith, or imagine Deanna Troi was a spy. You know, I love that we can do that in our own head and say, hey, shit, this thing was great.
Imagine Deanna Troi, because nobody's really sure of what her job on the Enterprise is. Imagine her job turns out, and she totally embraces this, is they set up a mud wrestling pit on the bridge, right? And her only job is to just get in there and mud wrestle herself all the time.
Oh my God. And then there's this episode where Bodega comes in wearing his cape and a las gun.
Bodega dived to the right.
Yeah.
Fired his las pistol.
This mud has gone solid. We need something to melt it. Get Bodega and his jetpack. Jetpack will melt the mud.
Jetpacked into view.
Pew! Quick, Deanna, use my cloak to cover your face from the jetpack.
He doesn't have cape, Lewis. This is not canon, all right? Bodega eschews the use of capes.
You can't have a cape and a jetpack at the same time,
ridiculous.
Motherfucker.
Do you want some interesting...
Only Boba Fett can manage that.
Yeah.
Well, Darth Vader had a cape, and it was apparently so heavy for the actor to wear. That's why he stomped around so much and he couldn't like lift his arms very heavily.
Darth Vader and Jason Bourne have a lot in common, because Jason Bourne stomps around a lot too. Like, for somebody who's meant to be like a little bit undercover and like inconspicuous, man, that guy has like an angry ass walk like everywhere he goes. Like, if I saw him in public, I'd be like, that guy is up to something for sure.
He is pissed
like,
off.
Stomping around like there's no tomorrow. Jeez.
Man, I fucking love the idea of a cape.
Yeah.
I was just, yeah.
You
oh,
can
man.
Get a cape, Lewis. If you want
to
wear a cape,
they're
wear
not
a cape.
At all fashionable, but You might be able to bring him back.
I look like a medieval dandy.
Yeah.
He would.
I think, like, you know what, though? You could wear one, and because sometimes convincing everybody that you're insane and a bit of a write-off is, like, a good tactic, right? Like, there's that...
Yeah, do it.
There's that mafia boss in New York who used to walk around in a bathrobe and slippers, and everybody thought he was insane and not capable of doing anything wrong or whatever. They thought that he was just, like, the, you know, the black sheep of his... family, but it turned out he was like the head of the family, and he was like fucking responsible for like arranging the murders of like 500 people and stuff. And
right,
he was like all ruthless, but like his ruse was that he would parade around acting insane, so everybody just like thought it's not him, it's gonna be somebody else or whatever. Cool, eh?
Yeah, that's a great.
So you could do that with a cape. You could be the same. Like,
I'm not hiding in plain sight.
I'm not saying like run the mafia, but like, you know, you could maybe get up to no good on the side, and nobody will suspect you with that cape.
Who's to say I don't already run the mafia, Sip? Oh,
Jesus,
man, my mind is melting right now. It's too much.
You've been shot by
my head.
Bodega's las gun.
Yeah,
yeah. Fucking, I love that. I just want to hit. I just want P-Flex to write a full-on.
Yeah, yeah. You could be like in Orange is the New Orange is the New Black. You remember the woman? Is it like, is it Suzanne or Susan? The one that writes, she writes that steamy fiction that everybody becomes obsessed with. Oh, it's really funny. Yeah,
oh,
it's really good.
Oh,
I have to watch
you could be
this.
Like that, period. And you could do that.
Bodega, yeah.
It's like some like steamy sci-fi.
I'll write a bodega short story.
Okay, sweet.
Okay. There you go.
I'm going to hold you to that.
All right, no,
maybe
I'll
you could get
it.
Your kids to help, actually.
Get the kids
I think,
to help.
You know, they... Yeah. I like how you dismissed that. So you like spat on that idea so hard. You were like, they don't know how to construct a good story.
They don't.
That's not the point. That's not the point. We're trying to capture like that enthusiasm, that
like
childhood
Axe Cop.
Like, stupid
Have
stuff.
Have you ever seen Axe Cop, a series of comics where, yeah, a guy just got his, I guess it was his nephew or maybe his son, to come
was
up with,
like
with stories for Axe Cop. No, he's literally just a New York City cop who has an axe. Just right. look up Axe Cop. It's very funny. Series of comic strips. They're very good.
That's amazing.
Okay, we're full of good suggestions today.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I think... Let's end it here because this was a great podcast. I
you
hope
know
you
what?
Have enjoyed
it. It's like
it.
You what? Said, you know, you pick your ending where you want your happy ending to be. I think this is that point.
This is where I
think
want
we've reached the happy ending.
To have a happy ending. I've got to have one now, actually. I've got it booked.
There's happy
a
ending.
Lovely lady coming around.
Booked at 11:30.
Give me a massage.
Give you an enema.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, I've got to do that. Sweet. All right. Holy shit.
Can we call
right,
this
cheers,
episode
guys.
Bodega
Nights.
Bodega Wears No Cape.
Bodega takes a poop in a box.
Bodega's enema. Oh, God.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye.